Father's Day in Las Vegas. I'm Brian Feldman, and this is Out of Line. First and foremost, I want to wish my father, Magnum, Spencer's father, Mark, and all of the fathers in Las Vegas and across the country a very happy and healthy Father's Day. I normally have my dad on the show every year. Not doing great in Michigan, but hanging in there, celebrating his, I guess this would be his 61st Father's Day, which is crazy. It's my 30th. Can't believe that, man. Time flies when you're having fun. That being said, Out of Line is live in the Fox Sports RCG Home Loans powered by Luminate Bank Studio every Sunday morning at 8 on Fox Sports Radio 98.9 FM and 1340 AM. Las Vegas, flagship of the Vegas Golden Knights and sister station of Raiders Nation Radio and ESPN Radio Las Vegas. We also include social media director Spencer the Wiz Ostrowski.
Nobody beats the wind.
And producer Chris Magnum Chapman, who aside from being a part of several shows here at Lotus Broadcasting, Mags also serves as the locker room reporter for the Vegas Golden Knights Radio Network. We are also streaming on the LV Sports Network, and you can watch the show on Facebook Live and Twitch. The page is called Out of Line. That's O-U-T-T-A-L-I-N-E. Follow the show on Instagram and X at Out of Line Fox LV. And since we are live, your calls and questions are welcome, although we never answer the phone. The Fox Sports RCG Home Loans, powered by Luminate Bank Studio Line, is 702-876-1340.
Hi, this is Bubby, and it's time for What's on Tap.
What's on Tap, brought to you by title sponsor RCG Home Loans, powered by Luminate Bank. Whether purchasing a new home or refinancing the home you already own, RCG Home Loans, powered by Luminate Bank, is the company to turn to for all of your home financing needs. To get information or to get your questions answered regarding anything mortgage or real estate related, contact the pros at RCG Home Loans, powered by Luminate Bank, today at 702-964-5720. What's on tap?
It's just one win. That's all it is. Doesn't matter if you score eight or you score one. You know, it's just one win. And we got to go to Florida and do a job and drag him back to Alberta.
Connor McDavid, yeah, they need to do a job. They stave off elimination last night, winning in dramatic fashion, in powerful fashion, 8-1 over the Florida Panthers, who are holding almost a stranglehold 3-0 lead as they head back to Florida. That's part of What's on Tap. We'll also talk about a little bit about the Vegas Golden Knights. Another name, a veteran, keeps popping up, and we'll give Simbin some credit as they talked about that in an article yesterday that I liked about this guy. Also, hey, one of the league's top defensemen, we've talked about it before, still not a deal in place with this guy going into the last year of his contract before becoming an unrestricted free agent. A lot of teams salivating. Who is he? Well, we'll let you know during Nightcap in just a bit. Again, we'll talk about the Stanley Cup Finals, and we'll also talk about the NBA Finals. God, we're almost mirror images of the series. I expected two great series, and I don't want to say we're getting garbage, but we're getting garbage. And also, Las Vegas Aces, man, what in the hell is wrong with the Aces? Well, on Father's Day, we'll talk into it and find out. And also, is Bryson DeChambeau going to run away with the PGA? I should say with the U.S. Open, man. Yeah, and his second U.S. Open, the last one he won, there was no fans in attendance, man. This one, he's engaging with the fans, a different Bryson DeChambeau. We'll talk a little bit about that as well. You don't want to miss fact this. We'll be talking about a Chicago Cubs pitcher that I'm sure Magnum has some insight and some fortitude on, and also Detroit Lions, man, are about to sign somebody that I am shocked they are about to sign. That's fact this. Also, big fight in Las Vegas last night, and we'll give you a little briefing on what's coming up with the Las Vegas Aviators very shortly here. That is What's on Tap if you are looking to buy a home or refinance the home you currently own. Or if you have any mortgage or real estate related questions, once again, contact the mortgage experts at RCG Home Loans, powered by Luminate Bank, today at 702-964-5720. Guys, happy Father's Day to everyone. Mags, I can't believe, you know, I just realized my daughter turned 30 in April. It's my 30th Father's Day, man. What the hell?
Yeah, and you're celebrating Grandfather's Day as well because your daughter has...
My third Grandfather's Day.
As a little guy. Although Grandparents' Day is in September, for those who don't know. But, hey, Manessis, I see you. What's up, guy? I don't know who he is, but he said, hey, buddy.
That's my buddy from Costa Rica, man.
Oh, well, hey, what's up, man?
You know, on top of that, I'm going to mention my friend out there. He goes by Papo. And you know what Papo did for me? So on the last day there, we get a ride back to the airport. My friends had to take off on last Sunday. They took off at noon. As you saw, I did the show last Sunday for my hotel in Costa Rica.
Yeah, it was loud.
I know it was crazy. I was in a big cafeteria, but what was crazy is I left two pairs of blue jeans and my buddy Mike left his swim trunks in our condo down where we were staying by the beach in Costa Rica. Papo, he had to drive some people to the airport Monday morning. He stopped at my condo, picked up my jeans for me, picked up the swimsuit, and drove it all the way out to my hotel, which is like an hour and a half from where he lives, to give me that, man. That is a hell of a guy, and I told you, I'll get you an ESPN hat the next time I come to Hako, Papo, and you're getting that for sure. There he is. Greetings from the sun in Hako. Hako, I hear it's raining like crazy out there. Almost had floods when I was there last week. It was nuts. Ooh. It's rainy season right now, but hey, I went surfing, had fun, beat the hell out of myself, and a lot of the trip I'm not going to talk about on the show. I'll leave that alone.
Well, it's out of line, man.
It is out of line. Other than that, listen, man, let's get right to it again. Guys, happy Father's Day. I don't say happy Father's Day internationally because it's Father's Day in the U.S. Every country has their own Father's Day. This is ours. Let's go. Let's hit Nightcap Spence.
Hockey players, as you know, are warriors. They don't give up. They come to play every game.
It's time for Nightcap, a cup full of the Vegas Golden Knights. From highlights to interviews to special events, the puck starts here.
Well, Spence and Chris, the puck may start in Las Vegas for a seasoned veteran. He's been talked about for the last couple of years about potentially being a Vegas Golden Knight. Last season, he helped my Detroit Red Wings to almost making the postseason. Another season where he scores 20-plus goals, over 25 assists, and of course I'm talking about Patrick Kane. Hated the guy when he was a Blackhawk. Obviously like him now as a Detroit Red Wing. Chris Sinbin wrote a very interesting article how if Jonathan Marchessault doesn't remain a Vegas Golden Knight, which a lot of us think he won't, Patrick Kane might be a good fit, kind of like Phil Kessel was a couple years ago, but with a way bigger upside.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't read the article myself. I'm definitely going to check it out now, and credit to Ken and Jason.
Yeah, Ken Bulkey, they do a great job.
They do a really good job of getting out information. So, a great source. He doesn't, you know what, he's not clickbait, which is something I respect, I appreciate, because to me there's nothing worse than clickbait, but... And those people who are clickbait, they know who they are, and I'm talking directly to you. But listen, if that's the case, Patrick Kane is a good player still, and he's a guy who can help this team. I don't know if I like the idea, though, of giving up Jonathan Marchessault and signing Patrick Kane, because I don't really think it helps you long term. Like, I think if you were going to make a bold move, I think you look at what's going on in Carolina, where they're potentially moving Martin Natchez, Jake Guentzel potentially on the trade block as well, at least the rights to Jake Guentzel because he does become a free agent on July 1st. But listen, if Patrick Kane is on your radar and he's a guy you want to sign and he's a guy who's willing to sign, I don't think you say no to that. I just wonder what's the mindset on a Patrick Kane. Like, I mean, he's not a kid. You know, he's been around a long, long time, one of the oldest players in the league now. But if it's a short one-year deal, maybe you take the chance because you know you got production out of him through, I don't want to say half a season, but, you know, he wasn't in Detroit the entire season. So, listen, I still think Kane will go to Buffalo at the end of the day. That's where he's from. The Sabres have not made the playoffs basically since before you became a father. It seems like it's that long. I know it feels like for me. I mean, my kid's 16 and a half, so I feel like the Sabres have not made playoffs. And it's not that quite that long, but it's close. So I don't know, man. Like, I don't know how I feel about it. Like, I know if they sign him, he's a good player. I just don't know if it's a move I want to make at this juncture, because I feel like you can go out and sign. If you're not going to sign Marchessault, I feel like there's guys who are younger that you could sign to longer term and get more production out of them over the course of the life of the contract. But if there's anything I've learned about this organization in now 7 years of covering them, they always have multiple wheels in motion. So there's nothing to say that Patrick Kane could not come here on a short one-year deal, and Jonathan Marchessault is also re-signed. They can get creative. There's things they could do. The salary cap is going to be up to $88 million, so even that few $100,000 helps the Golden Knights. Look, I mean, George McPhee, Kelly McCrimmon, they go big game hunting. They don't go after – they don't go hunting for pheasants. They don't go hunting for squirrels or rabbit. They go for the buffalo, the water buffalo, the lions, the giraffes. That's what they go hunting for. So these guys, if they sign Patrick Kane, you have to trust that there's something else coming. It's like when they traded for Anthony Mantha. You knew that that was not the only move that they were making.
Sure.
And we assumed that, all right, well, Noah Hanifin was the final move. Nope, guess what? We got Tomas Hertl coming too. So it's incredible the way this team operates. I love it. As a guy who covers this team, there's never a dull moment.
Well, you know what's nice, Chris, is that, like I always say, far be it for me, knowing hockey the way that I do and becoming from Detroit, I do not question Kelly McCrimmon and George McPhee. And I mean, anybody that does, look at the consistency of this team over seven seasons. One season they don't make the playoffs, and that's because they were so injury-riddled that year, it wasn't
and
funny.
They were still in it
right up until the end. Yeah. They should have gone to the second round every year except for this year, because San Jose, they got completely screwed in their second season on that terrible, terrible call that, you know, to this day, I still think is one of the worst calls I've ever seen in a postseason. But, you know, Patrick Kane is fourth in points per game at just under a point per game among this summer's unrestricted free agents. And he added 6 and 7 playoff games with the Rangers in this past season.
Yeah.
There's definitely a fit in Vegas. The key is going to be, it's going to be March. So, And how much they're able to pay him. They've already got all these big money guys that they've got to pay and that they are paying. And, of course, as you brought up, Noah Hanifin, they brought him in. So and they're going to have to pay this guy, which they did already. And, you know, Alex Pietrangelo, just going to be difficult. But Patrick Kane might be a guy to help. And talking about defenseman, Chris, that was my other one. You know, the biggest question, I mean, Shea Theodore, a huge fan favorite here in Las Vegas. He has tailed off. He has had injury problems. We've talked about him a number of times, but if a deal isn't in place by July 1st for this guy, Chris, you got to start believing that the possibility of him not being a Golden Knight at the start of the season are very real. Even though he's got one more year under his contract and he's not an unrestricted free agent until next season, if they don't give him more money, they could get absolutely nothing for him if they let him play out his contract.
Well,
so something's got to give.
They're not going to get nothing for him, because if they don't sign him by July 1st,
he's going to get traded.
He's going to get traded.
Yeah.
They're not going to let him walk for nothing. They're just too smart for that. They get something for everybody. The problem you run into is everybody knows that they're going to move him. So that diminishes the value a little bit. But I think if you don't sign him right away, or you don't sign him by July 1st, you hold on to him till the deadline. And you go big game hunting again.
Yep. I agree.
Because there's certainly teams that are either on the fringe of the playoffs, or a team that is in the playoffs, especially in the Eastern Conference, that thinks that, you know what, we could win with Shea Theodore and then we can sign him long term. So I still think if they're going to do something, they do something this summer. But if not, I would not be shocked if they held on to him to the deadline and moved him at the deadline, because they're not going to let him walk for nothing. And I think re-signing him is going to be extremely difficult when you've got Alex Pietrangelo still signed for a couple more seasons and Noah Hanifin basically locked up until like 2030-something. So they're good on the core. They've got young guys that I think they want to play, Kaden Korzak and maybe Lucas Cormier. Zach Whitecloud, they certainly probably want to get him some more ice time, help him get better.
No, Chris, you know, I'm agreeing with you 100%. I mean, I think the Golden Knights look at Shea Theodore more as a luxury than an indispensable
player. That's a great way to put it. He is a luxury at this point because I think he's not better than Hanifin.
No.
He's not better than Pietrangelo.
No.
And I think depending on what you want from your defenseman, you can make the case he's not better than McNabb.
McNabb is just – the reason he's not better than McNabb is you want to talk about one of the most durable, dependable players in the National Hockey League, Braden McNabb. Bruce Cassidy can't talk enough about him. And we, as guys that have been covering them since the inception of this team, understand the value of a guy like Braden McNabb. Just, you know, when you say blue-collar player in any sport, his picture should be one of those guys up there. He's always among the league leaders in block shots, which means he puts his self on the line every single time. The only reason he doesn't lead the league every year is because when Alec Martinez has been healthy, he's always the guy that Alex Martinez has led the league. But again, Braden McNabb is a true asset to this team. And like I said, I think most people would probably agree with what you just said. Even though he's a little bit older than Shea Theodore, I'd be hard-pressed to say I'd rather have Shea Theodore than Braden McNabb, especially when you look at the injury man hours they've lost with Shea Theodore over the past couple years. Segwayed into the Stanley Cup Finals. I got to tell you, Chris, I am not shocked by what I've seen. But when you see the capability of Edmonton last night and the power, the scoring power these guys possess, and when you look at the three-headed monster of Connor McDavid, Leon Draisaitl, and Evan Bouchard, what they're doing. You know, last night with Draisaitl's two assists, all three of them have over 20 assists in this year's postseason. That has never been done before in NHL history. And we're not even throwing Zach Hyman in the mix, who had 43 regular season goals as well. Another monster for this Edmonton Oilers squad. Skinner has played exceptionally well. You cannot blame the 3-1 deficit in this series to Skinner, is because I think he has played that well. Stewart's done as good as you could have expected him to do. The thing is, Chris, is like you've been saying all season, Florida entered this season with a chip on their shoulder. They came out of the 8-hole last year in the Eastern Conference, and they rode that all the way to the Stanley Cup Final and ran into a juggernaut in the Vegas Golden Knights. This team started the season like it was the postseason. They've played that way throughout, and now here they are. And it's funny because even though Edmonton didn't come out of the 8-hole, Edmonton kind of reminds me of Florida last year, a team that's right on the precipice of being great, being exceptional, some of the most offensively gifted players in the National Hockey League. And yet, they're going to fall short this year. I just don't think they're going to complete this comeback and be the second team in history to complete a four-game sweep to come back and win when they've been down by this deficit. But the Oilers are definitely nobody to sleep on. And, Chris, out of the two series, and we're going to talk about the NBA next, both series have a similar vibe to them. But if a team has a chance of coming back and winning the series, I would give the Oilers a huge nod over the Dallas Mavericks in the NBA.
Well, Mavericks have no shot. And neither do the Oilers. I don't care what happened last night. You could tell early on that Florida wasn't engaged. It was furthered by the fact that Darnell Nurse should have been ejected for a dirty hit. He wasn't. Edmonton goes down and scores a shorthanded goal. And you knew at that moment that Florida was probably not going to really push in this one. I'm disappointed they gave up 8 goals. Like, the fact that they were a complete no-show. But this is the last game the Oilers fans are going to see in Edmonton this season. So I'm glad they got a good show, because the next time you see that team on the ice in Edmonton, it's going to be preseason of next season. So enjoy your moment. You're going to get rocked tomorrow night. Or was it Tuesday they play?
Monday night. Tuesday. Tuesday, correct.
Yeah, a lot of travel in this series. Yep. So I think it's disappointing that Florida laid an egg. Like, I would have liked to have seen them compete a little bit in the game. Like, if you're going to lose, don't lose 8-1. This comes on the heels of them giving up 9 goals.
Chris, I'll tell you what, real quickly. If Verhaeghe scores that goal early, that when Skinner makes that, it could have been a whole different hockey game.
Well, they hit the post, right? Twice on that power play. Yep. So they go back to back. If they score those goals, the shorthanded goal probably doesn't happen.
Yep.
Well, it won't, because the power play's over.
Yep.
But 5-on-5, the Oilers finally showed up. And, you know,
15 players Different players had a point yesterday.
Yeah,
that's unbelievable.
You went way down the lineup. Holloway had a point. I think he had a goal and an assist. I mean, listen,
Holloway had two goals and an assist.
Yeah, I mean,
big game.
But at the end of the day, Florida's the better team. It's great that the Oilers finally showed up when they were down 3-0. They'll go back to Florida, Sunrise, and the series will end there.
But Chris, could you see this team being the Florida Panthers
next year? I don't. I think their blue line sucks.
And Skinner is playing a little out of his mind where
Skinner's not as good as he's not a I don't think Skinner is a Stanley Cup winning goalie. And the problem is they don't have the room to get better. Like they're up against it. Like they can't go out and get unless they got creative and moved Hyman or Nugent Hopkins or because you're not moving Darnell Nurse. Nobody's taking that contract.
No,
I mean he's one of the worst players on their team, and he's the third.
Hey,
highest
he scored
paid.
A goal last night.
He shouldn't have even have been in the game.
What
at
a great
point.
Did you see that pass by McDavid?
Yeah,
I think you could have put the puck in the net.
Yeah,
everyone was the whole focus is on McDavid, and he throws a little back pass. Evander Kane's wide open coming up the slot, just puts it in the net. I mean, it was a hell of a shot.
I shouldn't say he's the worst player on their blue line. What I mean when I say that is he doesn't play up to his contract, and it's an unmovable contract because of that. I mean, $9.5 million a year?
No, it's too much for a guy that can lay you out and not score a lot of points. That's too much.
And it came on the heels of a good season, but he hasn't done anything since. Look, this team is all McDavid and Draisaitl, and I just don't think they could get back. And here's why. The West is too good. Dallas laid an egg. But you know what, Brian? If the Golden Knights had not blown that game in Arizona where they gave up like 5 goals in the third period, Edmonton is out in the first round because the Golden Knights would have beat them. They would have beat the Oilers in the first round. They may not have beaten them now. They would have beaten them in the first round.
I don't know, Chris. Like I said, the thing is with Edmonton is, you know, it is playing very disciplined hockey against this team. You have to be sound, and you have to stay out of the penalty box. We already know that.
Well, Florida
and the
takes
one
a
thing
ton of penalties.
That Edmonton has done, as we've seen in the postseason, is Edmonton has shored up their special teams, especially the penalty kill. They were the best penalty kill team coming into the Stanley Cup final in the postseason this year, and that was something Edmonton had worked very hard on. I like Edmonton. I really like Chris Knobloch as a coach. Chris, you know, this team was looking really lousy at the beginning of the season. They made the head coaching change, and almost immediately this team turned around and became the offensive powerhouse that most people expected them. And I know you as well. Spence, I want you to play this if you can before we move on. Paul Maurice after the game. I know we love Paul Maurice. The guy is a comedian. I think he's got a career after hockey if he doesn't want to be a coach. He always has something bright to say. He's always witty. And this was Paul Maurice after the game last night.
Good players, and they scored, and they will get confidence from that. They'll feel good, right? And then the puck's going to drop. I'm not saying they aren't going to feel good in the next game. I'm just the puck drops, and everything changes then. So we're going to rally. We'll recoup, recover, move forward, get ready. Take 3-1 going home. I'll come up with better answers. It'll be good.
I mean, he'll come up with better answers. He said it'll be good. But, you know, Chris, to echo your sentiments on the way Florida kind of was in this game, like lackadaisical, just didn't have the edge, wasn't into it. You can even tell for Paul Maurice. Secretly, I think they all, as much as you like to sweep to really show your flex your muscle and show your dominance, you love to win at home. And this gives Florida a chance to go home, win game 5, and celebrate on their home ice, and also make Edmonton travel all the way across the world again. Because it's like, isn't that, I think it is the longest commute in all the NHL is Edmonton, Florida commute.
It's the longest Well, I think Vancouver to Sunrise would be longer.
Would be longer?
But this is the longest distance between two teams in the Stanley Cup final, longer than Vancouver-Boston was in 2011. I mean, Florida and Vegas was no picnic either. So for the Panthers, they're getting their frequent flyer miles in these Stanley Cup finals the last 2 years. But I thought L.A., New York was probably longer. Maybe that was the longest up until this point. But I mean, we're talking over 3,000 miles.
Yeah, it's a long plane ride, and you know what? It's thank God for all these guys. Be happy out there that all the jets and flights are chartered now, and you're not flying commercially.
Because well, the media,
that would be a nightmare.
You know who else is hoping it doesn't go back to Edmonton? The media.
Yeah.
Because they're like, you know what? Let's finish this in five. Because
it's a nightmare.
If it does go back to Edmonton, I have this sneaky feeling that it's going to go back to Florida for a game seven. Listen, as someone who's done it.
Oh, you don't. Yeah, you did it.
You don't want. I mean, I hate to say it, but that year the Golden Knights lost to the Capitals. I was like, oh man, if they win this game in Vegas, and I have to go back to Washington for a game six. Oh, it's another cross-country flight.
I know about 2 million people in Vegas that would have loved your problem.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah,
you know, we always got to remember how cool it is. I said Florida would win it in seven. I said Florida would win it in seven. At the beginning, I liked Edmonton. I'd love to see Edmonton make this more of a series, but I think they've got a better chance of making it competitive than moving on over to the NBA. You know, Chris. Been very, very disappointing, especially Boston being without Porzingis. I thought that would give Dallas a little bit of a chance. I know that, you know, you know how beaten up Luka Doncic is. This guy is really beaten up. I wish he'd quit whining so much. He's really starting to bother me how he whines about every call, although I really thought the officiating was garbage in game three. I really did. I thought, wow, it looks like the officials want Boston to win. But Dallas makes it, you know, gets their one token win, a blowout win. Boston was not there at all. There is no question to me that they want this series going back to Boston to put up that, what is it, the 18th title or whatever in Boston to so they can get their, you know, another championship banner hung up there and what have you. But, you know, the one thing about the Boston series, I should say the two things about the Celtics team that maybe I did not give enough credit for. Number one is Holiday. The acquisition of Holiday from Milwaukee has been unbelievable, and I don't think there's enough credit given to that because defensively he is one of the best defensive players in the NBA.
We don't
and
ever
the
other talk guy, about him.
As everyone says, Jason Tatum. Let me tell you something. Without Jaylen Brown, this team is not winning the NBA final this year. Period.
Yeah. I mean, Jaylen, like, first of all, the Celtics bench is really damn good.
Yeah.
Like, you bring Porzingis back, and I know he is what he is, but like, he has that game one, and you're like, huh. Listen, I think everyone knew after game one that the Celtics were winning this final. But yeah, you're right. Jrue Holiday, maybe one of the more underrated players of his generation, just because he's so good defensively. He's already won, I think, at least one title.
Yeah, one title with Milwaukee. Yep.
And he's been around a long time. Like, he's been around a long...
You know what's crazy is, Chris, he gets better defensively every year, and it's hard to believe that because he's already one of the best defensive players in the NBA.
I don't know if he still is, but he was married to one of the U.S. national women's soccer team players.
I don't know.
I don't know if they're still married, but, like, imagine how good, like, of an athlete that kid would be.
Oh, my God.
Like, so, Jrue Holiday, you know, he's on the verge of winning another title.
Yep.
Brad Stevens, he moves from the bench to the front office, and he gets the job done there. Look, at some point we have to really credit Brad Stevens as being one of the great basketball minds of
and the ability to transition. So few guys,
not very many.
Larry Brown, I think, the only guy that's ever coached a college to national championship and an NBA championship, the only one.
Yeah.
And Brad Stevens, although never coached a college national championship, to say he did not overachieve at the collegiate level would be the understatement of the century.
I mean, they almost won
twice.
Well, the second time,
no, they didn't. But they made it.
Yeah, they made it back to back years.
Because of him, a school that you're never going to hear from again.
Butler.
You will never hear from Butler again at that to make it to the NCAA championship flipping game. That's unbelievable,
yeah,
Chris.
So Brad Stevens, certainly a brilliant.
Yep.
And you know what's funny? It would never happen, but I'm shocked that the Lakers weren't banging down his door to coach that team.
Yeah, me too. Really, me too.
Like, I mean, there's no way he's going from Boston to Los Angeles, but you got to make the effort.
Yeah.
And make it public that you made the effort. Let him turn you down, you know. But then again, maybe you don't want, you know what, the guy, we came knocking and bred. I guess maybe I understand that perspective, too.
Danny Hurley was a complete smokescreen, too.
It was brilliant.
It was really brilliant.
I'm a certified Laker hater. So, and I'm a guy who grew up on the East Coast, and Stoops.
I hate him too, brother.
One of my very best friends is a UConn like fan. So, and Danny Hurley's from Jersey City, which is, you know, he went to high school with my cousin, St. Anthony's. So we have that, you know, a little bit of Jersey City bond. So I'm definitely thrilled that he turned them down because I think he would have been a great coach. You know what? Why doesn't LeBron just coach the team?
He does.
He's already the GM.
He's the GM and the head coach.
Yeah, let him.
The bottom line is.
And they could draft his son who's going to. Yep. I mean, I hope the kid turns out to be good. Just because I think if he doesn't, the nonsense that's going to go on from the vile people that are out on social media, like, I'm not rooting for him to be a superstar, but I hope he turns out to be a good player in the NBA because – he's going to get destroyed. And,
well, he's just going to have to. It's going to be a different type of Caitlin Clark situation.
Well, don't even get me started on that.
I know, yeah. But you're going to come in the league and you're going to have people hating on you just because of who you are and the publicity you got because of who you are, not how well you play.
With Clark, it's totally, it's undeserved. Like,
well, the media did this.
But no. The media didn't do it. Certain factions of the media did it by pumping her up as being like the poster child for their movement. And, you know, like Clark said, she's like, people shouldn't be using my name to justify certain things. And I'm glad she said it. But, you know, could we, like, calm down on beating the crap out of her? Like,
seriously, don't blame her for what everyone else did.
Yeah,
for her.
like. There's clearly.
I mean, you're unhappy because Nike gave her a $28 million contract.
Go be as good as her.
Yes, and it's based on publicity yeah. and the X factor of what draws crowds in. For God's sakes, people come to see her play.
Yes,
you look at
the numbers of the games that she's playing in that city. The games sell, and for a league that is desperate for eyes and revenue, yeah. Like I understand there's two sides to this, and like I said the other couple weeks ago,
they have established, Chris, to a degree because of the television contract, ESPN. I mean, they're one of the first shows. They have established relevance, Chris.
Yeah, well, but
and you got to give credit
maybe,
for that.
Maybe for the wrong reasons.
I agree.
Like listen, that falls on the WNBA for not marketing their stars, like. For years, you had Diana Taurasi as the best basketball player on the planet, and you failed to really market her to the mainstream. Asia Wilson, brilliant personality, fantastic player, one of the best players on. She might be the best player in the WNBA. They've done a terrible job. Like, locally, she's been marketed, and she's got such a dynamic personality.
She does.
Like, she should be on NBA. On TNT,
I think we will see Asia Wilson obviously commentating as her career winds down in the future.
Sabrina Ionescu, right? Another Kelsey Plum. You've got all these great players, you know, all these amazing players that are, when you watch them, you realize how highly skilled some of them are. The league has failed to market them. Caitlin Clark, she didn't market herself.
No.
She just went out there, and she was the best player in the college ranks for the last 2 years. And you know what? I have no problem with her not being on the Olympic team. There's a reason she didn't earn it, and that's fine.
Not only did she not earn it, she would be a distraction. The object is to win a gold medal,
yes.
Not to be a media circus.
And this idea that, well, and you see all of the vile fans of hers pushing, well, you know, it's going to bring in eyes. For the Olympics, enough people watch the Olympics. A ton of people watch Olympics. And the thing is, now you're arguing for someone to be there despite the fact that they didn't earn it. Like these people will argue against that
in so many facets of life.
And then when it benefits them, they're arguing, well, she should be included just because she's good.
I'm just going to say this, and I want to leave this alone because I don't want to get into a big discussion and out there about this. But the bottom line is, you know, you look back to the original Dream Team. Larry Bird had no business being on it.
Neither did Christian Laettner. Now, I understand why.
Christian Laettner, they had to have one college player.
That was the agreement.
For the agreement.
But it should have been Shaquille O'Neal.
But the bottom line line is, you know, you're leaving off, you know, guys like Isaiah Thomas. We know why. We know why.
Ridiculous.
Okay,
yeah.
It was ridiculous. Maybe, you know, I mean, the point was is there were guys in that team that were just basically on by reputation. Caitlin Clark, I'm not going to say she has revolutionized the WNBA. That'd be way too strong of a term. But she is changing the face of it because way more people are paying attention now.
But so that's for not that, why you put someone
no,
on the
I
team.
Agree. I say the reason you don't put her on was for the circus. Not, believe me, the 11th to 12th player on the bench aren't going to see the floor in the Olympics other than in blowouts. So yeah. That would have been her. So putting her on wouldn't have made a difference. This team's going to win a gold medal regardless. But the point is she would have been on for simply the hoopla, and you don't need that, the objects, to win a gold medal. Listen, really quickly, speaking of the Aces, Spence, go ahead. This was Becky Hammon after the game last night, because what is up with the Aces? 1-5 in their last six games. They're a 500 team. This team has, without question to me, lost their edge. Spence, go ahead and roll the tape.
It is what it is. We're not a very good team right now. And you can talk about potential and talent all day long. Great. We have that. We don't play together collectively as a group, defensively or offensively right now.
Spencer, what is the problem with the Las Vegas Aces? I know you stick around, you watch the WNBA. I'm a fan as well, maybe not nearly as big of a fan as you are. What is the problem with this team? I understand Chelsea Gray has not stepped foot on the court since she hurt her foot in the WNBA finals last season. However, I know she's a big part of it. I don't want to say, does she make that much of a difference? We know that she does. But they picked up a good player in the draft and also in free agency. What is the problem with this team, and can they turn it around?
I'm sure they can turn it around, but I think what the real issue is think about like the year that Asia Wilson came into the league. I mean, they were pushing for the finals like from that moment, and it hasn't stopped since. Multiple trips to the finals, some they've won, some they've lost. But think about that for any regular NBA team. I mean, I think LeBron did it technically for a while, but even then, he switched teams at one point, like in those finals runs from Miami to the Cavs. And this team has been relatively unchanged for many years now. I think what you're seeing is just, I guess, suffering from success may be the best way to put it. This team has just been going through it, and they've been in the Olympics, and it's just like a never-ending cycle. And I think there's just a bit of exhaustion kicking in. And I don't know, like, how do you keep going? How do you stay motivated when you've already reached the top two times in a row? I mean, this is essentially unprecedented territory in the WNBA. I think these girls are just exhausted.
Spencer, Houston won it three times in a row. That's the goal, to be the second team to win three-peat. And I'm not disagreeing with the defense. To me, the problem with this team right now is defensively. They have been way more porous than usual. They're near the bottom of the league in every defensive ranking. And, you know, in spite of Asia Wilson, who's been her usual self, she's leading the league in scoring and rebounding. You know, still the premier player in the WNBA, as far as I'm concerned, the face of this franchise. But she got flat out outplayed last night. And Jonquel Jones, 34 points, 8 rebounds. I mean, we know how good this woman is going to be and continues to get better each year. But Vegas, again, defensively, what do you do as a coach or a team when defensively you suck? And does Chelsea Gray make a difference? Absolutely. I won't deny that. But you see defensive lapses. I see it with Kelsey Plum. As good as Jackie Young has become, one of the best guards in the WNBA, a huge integral cog in this team, she has been poor defensively at times. I have seen her get run off. What does it take when you're lacking defensively? How do you get that effort out of your players?
I think that Becky Hammon just needs to find a way to like make them, I don't know, like have that dog in them again, you know, because I think, let's think about the reality of it. They get bounced in like the first or the second round this year. Who cares? You know what I mean? Like, they've been so successful. I think that like when they had their first championship run, I bet they played with a very different kind of veracity. So
well, they
you know,
did
it's a very,
because you, because remember, they lost with Liz Cambage, and they made the change to get rid of Liz, and they played a much different style. But yeah, Spence, they lost to Phoenix in the semifinals the year before they won it. So I think you're right. There was a different edge to that team coming in. You know, you mentioned something, though, and Becky kind of alluded to it. They didn't come into camp with that edge.
No.
They didn't come into camp with that hunger and focus. And you know what? I think Becky Hammon will coach in the NBA. She's going to earn her money this year, because when you're 6-6, 12 games in, and you're the defending back-to-back champs, you're going to go out there and you're going to find a way. And I think she's a good enough coach to get this thing turned around. And I think the players on the team are good enough to get it turned around. But when I watch them, you know what? And help me out if I'm wrong. They look bored. They look disengaged.
It's like you've accomplished everything you can, and you're not putting forth full effort. Big game coming up for them Wednesday night. They're at home. They're playing the Seattle Storm. To me, a game they really need to win and stay above 500 this year and somehow grasp what they lost. I don't know if they will, but again, it's not unprecedented territory, Spence, being the fact that it has been done before. A team is three-peated, and the Aces have an opportunity to do this. Can they turn around? I think they can. I do think they need Chelsea Gray back in that lineup. She really is a spark plug. Next to Asia Wilson, she's the most vocal player on the floor. She gets engaged with everything, and they really seem to rally around her, and I think it's going to be huge if she can get back in the mix for them again. They play again Wednesday night. Guys, moving over to keeping pace, the U.S. Open, man. You know, there's four times I get locked into golf all year, you know, and obviously the Masters is one of my favorite sporting events and spectacles, and U.S. Open would have to be number two when it comes to golf. Bryson D. Chambeau on the LIV Tour. He's wearing his hat, his shirt. He's representing the LIV Tour. I don't love that, his team on the LIV Tour, but I love the competition in this. And this guy has just gotten better, has gotten more focused. 7 under par. He could be 8 under par. He's three strokes clear of Patrick Cantlay, Pavin, who's going to be playing with him, and Rory McIlroy, who had a pretty good round as well. But, you know, 3 strokes is a lot when Bryson DeChambeau is as dialed as he is. And the one thing that has made him so much better, he's always been able to hit the ball a long way. He's one of the best drivers in the world as far as distance goes, and competes in the long drive competitions. But the one thing with Bryson DeChambeau that's changed, it's not the new clubs that he's designed, the longer clubs with the bigger hosel or whatever. What it is it's the blade. It is amazing how many greens he is one putting. His ability to read the greens has become great. He is rolling the ball as well as anybody I've seen on tour this year. And I'll tell you what, is he as good as Scotty Scheffler? I don't know. That guy's really consistent. Obviously, right now, Scotty's got a lot on his plate, a new father, and didn't play real well here. But Bryson DeChambeau, one of the best golfers in the world. Chris, I don't think anyone jumps in front of him today. I think he closes this out. Not really a wire-to-wire win, but, you know, it's going to be his second. He was one bad shot away from being in a playoff for the PGA with Shoffley. So, I mean, this guy is playing great, great golf. It's nice. He wants to win this one because when he won it in 2020, there were no fans. It was during the pandemic. For him to win it this year, to prove to everyone. And what I really love about him is people have said he's got an attitude problem, not the nicest guy in the world, this, that, and the other. I have not seen a player engage with the fans like this since Happy Gilmore.
Yeah, you know what? And I think outside of the Masters, I feel like this is the one you want to win.
Of course.
You know, because of the relevance, you know, the final Sunday is always on Father's Day. And I'm sure for all these players, they have memories growing up with their dad watching.
I got to cut in real quick. My greatest Father's Day memory is the 1996 U.S. Open at Oakland Hills in Michigan. Me and my dad walked around the practice round and followed Tiger Woods and Jack Nicklaus. I will never forget that. It was the Wednesday before Father's Day, but it didn't matter, Chris. That was so cool.
Yeah, so for these guys, like I was saying, you know, to be able to, the memories of watching this with their dads, maybe some of them going with their dads, you know, it's special. And, you know, I think anytime you can do something special that has meaning for you and your father, it's always a little bit more special. And, you know, I love the British, but what I like about the U.S. Open is generally, and yesterday was one of those days where most of the players looked like absolute crap.
Well, what I love about the U.S. Open is it's the hardest course four majors.
I mean, Pinehurst, I actually have a friend who works there, you know? And so, it's one of those courses where it's never set up for guys to shoot like 17 under.
It doesn't lack in beauty, and it definitely doesn't lack in the stint meter or the difficult or the like, degree of difficulty.
Like my big gripe with the Masters is sometimes you see guys absolutely rip that course up.
Yep.
And
all of them PGA 21 under par.
Yeah, you're like, eh, it's a little too easy. Like I want
British. If the wind's not there, they kill it.
That's
well,
yes.
The wind. But if the wind isn't in the British,
they tear that up too.
Tear it up.
Yeah, because it's so wide.
Yes, and you can make mistakes. It's open. You can make mistakes.
But like, I always like the British when the weather is not cooperating. You see the guys out there in their
like
rain
it.
Gear.
There is nothing like it.
But like to me, the U.S. Open is always the one where. The guy who wins it, you know he had a great week, and he was just better than everyone else. There's no luck involved when you win the U.S. Open.
When you win the U.S. Open, even when Steve Jones won that 1996, I said, you know what? He was
you
the only player under par at one under par. Yes. He won the U.S. Open at one under.
You gotta
when
go
does that happen?
That one. Yeah.
So, incredible tournament. I'm going to say Bryson DeChambeau wins it going away. I think he'll win it by one stroke over Rory McIlroy. I would love to see them get back into the thing. I think Rory will have a good round today. He's dialed in, but I think it's going to go to DeChambeau. All right, Spencer, without further ado, let's hit it. I've been waiting for this one. Fact this.
Fact this. If you don't like the facts, take your ass back to bed. Fact this.
Fact this is brought to you by Lifelike Hair Center of Las Vegas. If you are experiencing hair loss or thinning hair and want to learn about the best non-surgical options available, call 702-737-5759 or go to lifelikehair.com and schedule your free consultation today. It is a fact. A 30-year-old rookie pitcher for the Chicago Cubs is arguably the best pitcher in baseball right now. Also a fact. The Detroit Lions are about to sign and pay a kicker. You heard that right. This, first, the 30-year-old rookie pitcher for the Cubs is Shota, is it Imanamina? How do you say his last name?
Wait, who?
The Cubs rookie pitcher you don't know from Japan?
Oh, no, I haven't seen him, yeah.
Oh, my God, unbelievable. Imanamina, and who after yesterday's win, Chris, versus the Cardinals, is 7-1 with an ERA of about 1.7, which is unbelievable. And according to several reports, the Lions' new kicker is going to be Jake Bates of the UFL's Michigan Panthers, who has kicked multiple 60-plus yard field goals this year, including a season-long 64-yarder, a career-long. I'm not shocked by both things, considering what they say about this kid from Chicago. He's unreal. Shota, he goes out there. He engages with the fans.
I should know who he is.
I was expecting you to know all about him.
He played for the Yokohama Bay Stars.
Yes, he did.
Yeah, that's my wife's team, so I
should
know.
30-year-old rookie, and the guy is, Chris, 7-1 with a 1.7 ERA in mid-June. That's pretty damn good for your first season in the bigs.
Yeah, especially in Chicago, right? Where
the ball flies out of that stadium.
So yeah, I'm disappointed that I
you will now though.
Yeah,
you're gonna
like,
dial
the
in.
Thing is, like, I don't really start paying attention to baseball until after 4th of July because my Mets usually are way out of it by then. So, so this guy, I'm looking at the stats, like he's having
Shota Imanaga.
Yeah, he's having a phenomenal year. Yeah. The throwing philosopher. Is what they call him. And
they call him Mike, too. I don't know why, but they call him either the throwing philosopher or Mike.
Why not, right?
Yep.
Maybe that's what he goes by. I don't know. But, yeah, he played with Trevor Bauer last year in Yokohama.
Yep.
And the funny thing is I actually know the PR guy for the Bay Stars, so I'm really shocked that I am not aware of this. So, great start to his career in the
majors.
They
are saying, Chris, if he continues at this pace, he's probably going to start the All-Star game.
He might be Rookie of the Year.
Can you imagine a rookie? He's 30 years old. I mean, the guy's in his peak of his career right now.
But, I mean, listen, Ichiro wasn't a baby when he came over either. So, you know, the thing is, I think when you're one of these Japanese players and you come over later in your career, you understand the game a little bit better than some of the younger guys. Like, and I don't know if he was a free agent and he came over, or if the, you know, the Bay Stars posted him and Chicago paid for him. But I mean, listen, it's pretty damn cool. You know, like,
it just shows you how competitive baseball is. They're not getting enough credit.
It's the second best. Listen, I think there's a Major League Baseball clearly superior, but Japanese League is probably just a little bit above AAA. And then I think AAA is way ahead of the Korean League. Like Korean League is, there's some good players, but I think there's only one player. Jung Ho Kang is the only guy to my knowledge who came directly from the Korean League to the majors and had success. So generally that's not something that happens. It's cool to see another Japanese player come over and have a lot of success.
No, I'm excited about it. And I was watching yesterday, saw a small portion of the game, and I'm like, wow, this guy is good. The way he locates his pitches, he's big. He's a big guy, too. Left-handed, strong, and solid. And the other part of fact, this, as I mentioned, Jake Bates is reportedly going to be signing a 2-year deal with the Detroit Lions, kicked for the Michigan Panthers. He literally coming off of a standout season in the UFL, connecting on 360-plus yard field goals. The first of these was a game-winning 64-yarder in Week 1 that established the record for the longest field goal in UFL history to this point and set the tone for the rest of the season. The only longer field goal in all of professional football, Chris, I was at the game, Baltimore Ravens kicker Justin Tucker's 66-yarder against the Detroit Lions at Ford Field in 2021. Bates is he
the guy who had the YouTube videos going around?
No, that's not him.
Okay.
Different guy, but with the Panthers, they just keep showing him. And I'm like, he's in Detroit. You know what? I was going to be so pissed if Campbell doesn't sign him and you're going to keep your kicker from last year, right?
Who you didn't trust.
You didn't want to, in the most crucial situations, you wouldn't put him on the field. Now, Jake Bates gives you no excuse not to kick field goals when you are supposed to. And again,
another thing is, with the new rules in the NFL, this guy's going to be kicking the ball out of the end zone.
Every time.
Yeah.
Every single time. Yeah. But it will be nice to have a kicker that you finally have confidence, because they had confidence in Prater for years before Prater, my God. I think Jason Hansen, 16 or 17 years with the Lions. Matter of fact, I used to laugh because for several years, Chris, Jason Hansen would be on the cover of their media guide. And I would always say, if a kicker is on the cover of your media guide in the NFL, you are flat out bad.
Yeah. Remember, Eddie Murray to Jason Hansen?
Yeah.
Was that like the handoff, Eddie Murray?
Eddie Murray. I mean, it went on for a long time. The Lions,
and not the baseball player Eddie Murray.
No,
the good Eddie Murray.
No, steady Eddie, who a long time ago, Monty Clark did a little prayer, and Eddie Murray kicked the field goal, 43-yarder in San Francisco in the playoffs, wide right. Blamed it on Gary Danielson's hold, though.
But Gary Danielson, nice.
But the truth of the matter is this guy Bates is expected to be great. He finished the season 75%, 21 of 28, and across the overall in the regular season and postseason. This guy, kid's the real deal, and I'm looking forward to seeing him kick in Detroit this year. Ending this up, we'll just let you know, if you didn't hear yesterday, Tank Davis made a triumphant return to the ring after more than a year away, and once again showing why he is one of the top pound-for-pound boxers in the land. Eighth-round knockout over Frank Martin, and it wasn't really even close, and he retains his WBA championship. And finally, Las Vegas Aviators, check them out. They are going to be, I think they're in town for one more game.
Yeah, today. Then they go to Tacoma.
They play against the Salt Lake Bees, my favorite name of all the teams in professional sports.
I was out there Wednesday.
I saw in the text message.
Yeah, Bark and the Berm took my puppy. Second time this year we've gone.
Great media people in Las Vegas. None better than the media relations director of the Las Vegas Aviators, Jim Gemma.
I'm calling for a forensic audit on Jim Gemma.
He always moves the goalposts,
yes,
I'll tell you that.
Jimmy moves the goalposts.
Listen, we're
like
out of time.
Else.
Same time next week. Might have a really cool guest on next week. We'll let you know in the future. I'm Brian Feldman. Happy Father's Day to everyone out there. Thanks, Chris. And, of course, thanks, Spencer, back at his apartment. We will see you next week. Same time, same place. Sunday mornings right here on Fox Sports Radio. Out of line, 8 o'clock in the morning. We'll see you. Have a great Father's Day. Bye-bye.